Okay, now it's going. There we go. I got buttons. All right. Let me go ahead and get this notification here out of the way real quick. I think it ought to be popping up on this Sky Reef. Let me go to Barman. And I'm going to do a retweet. Okay, we're almost actually officially live in about here in a minute or so. Okay. We are live now, officially, on the RealLibertyMedia.com network, RLMRadio.xyz. Whoops, how'd I get that copied there? Is that, was that for me? I'm going to go ahead and do a double tweet then. I don't know, I had a live link there, but that must have been yours. So, I will go back to... I gotta go back over here to catch and copy that again. I did something wrong. Probably have to delete that one. That's all right. I've been going at this all day. I think I'd be ready. Copy. And I'll retweet. Now I'll go back to mine. Make sure I'll just go ahead and delete that so there's no confusion. I don't know what that live. Oh, I know what it was. I think. All right, tweet that. And I'm going to go to my, and I'll be back over, and we'll be actually having something on the video that will be coming downstream. So everybody's listening in live. We are live right here, and I'm almost actually to start this. And I'm ad-libbing along the way. This one here is going to get deleted, and then I'll be done, I do believe. Pardon? Okay, good. You're screen sharing off of me? Okay. No, that'd be all right. It's okay. Let's see. Where am I going over here? I forgot. I'll have to go back in just a minute. I wanted to look at yours. I want to look at your page. We'll get officially. Oh, I know what I have to do. I'm going to start Roger Stone. And I need to go to Twitter and I'll have to find it this way. All right, so we're going. We're going to Ammon Bundy's page. Official. Ammon's not running it now. Somebody took over for him and obviously somebody he trusts. And I think I know who it is. Okay, well, I'm turned on here. My mic is over there and on you. And I'm looking away from the mic on this other computer. Can y'all hear me in there in the chat room? Give me a A-okay. All good. I'm going to ad lib right now. Let's just get this going here. This is from Ammon Bundy, the official page on Twitter. Roger Stone speaks to a large crowd after being released. So he's out on $250,000 bail from NBC News. Let me just scroll down and see some more headlines. 55 minutes ago, Ammon tweeted, breaking news, Roger Stone was arrested this morning by the FBI. And I think it's a typo connected to the Mueller and the Trump investigation from Oregon Live. Wonder if that's going to be video or if Maxine Bernstein wrote this. Who did? Associated Press. That's probably going to be I'm blanking. But if it is him, I'll see it and I'll know. And I'll be able to say, yeah, that is him. Who wrote this? Doesn't say so far. It's by the Associated Press. What's that guy's name? Doggone it. When I'm not thinking about it, Iowa. See, I don't see the author of this. I'm scrolling to the bottom. And then we'll come back. Really? So I think they probably just... take it and copy this over. I can't believe they don't even give the author here. of this article. It says from the AP. So, anyways, we'll just read it here a little bit. The says Roger Stone, a confidant of President Donald Trump, was arrested in the special counsel's Russian investigation in a pre-dawn raid at his Florida home Friday on charges that he lied to Congress and obstructed the probe. The 7-count indictment against Stone, a self-proclaimed dirty trickster, is the first criminal case in months from special counsel Robert Mueller. Goes on to say it provides the most detailed data about how Trump campaign associates in the summer of 2016 were actively seeking to politically benefit from the release of hacked material damaging to Hillary Clinton's campaign. It alleges that unnamed senior Trump campaign officials contacted Stone to ask when stolen emails related to Clinton might be disclosed. So I guess deep fighting, right? Wonder how that'll turn out. I'm going to tell you, the FBI is dirty. What I firsthand know about them, they are dirty. Dirty, dirty. And, of course, Roger Stone was working with closely with a lot of folks involved with the Bundy Ranch standoff trial. He was in contact with folks there. All right, so you'll be seeing later on, you're listening live in chat, you're not seeing it, but we'll bring this into the video for later. Trump shut down. All right, so Roger Stone's out. All right, let's go back to the broadcast over here, the broadcast page, and a quick look at the chat. So I guess y'all are hearing me because Grimner says, look out, I'm turned on. Touch me, turn me on, and turn me loose. And here we go, we're loose. This is a Ponder Gander with, I'm your host, Vincent Easley, the second. This is the 25th of January of 2019. This is a radio writing series. It's the PGV1E3, so it's volume, Ponder Gander Volume 1, Episode 3. I was talking before the official coming to air. Yeah, it's going to take a while to do this. So I'm taking my first two broadcasts in this series, and I've kind of uncrumpled them. I'm just going to leave them over there and fetch back. So this is going to take a lot more to produce all of this as needs to be done. I'm just going to keep going, and eventually I'll call it all down into those 13 and a half chapters. But for now, I'm going to run with it, and going back in to the outline and working on the structure of it all. So there's a lot more to do. I've got some at the bottom of this, which I've published it, and if you'd like to be following around, I can't do it there because I'll chat. Be right back. Let's see here. I'll have to go fetch it. Come here. Can you, that thing's slow. Wait, here we go. Okay. Give me a second. Be patient, please. There it is. That thing's slow. And I'm going to grab this real quick and we'll throw it back over to the chat room. If you guys want to follow along that way, you'll see what I'm seeing in real time, that is. And there it goes. All right. Thanks, Hawk. Says the intended to intimidate people. Yeah, there's some dirty deeds that are going on for sure. All right. So if y'all in chat want to open up there and follow along, and this will be what will be seen in the video. And some people, I guess, need or like to have visual with audio. A lot of people can't just listen to somebody ramble on for a couple of hours. Let's see if we can get this Artunication underway. So today is chapter 1, part 3. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. The state's appeal to bring Bundy et al. Back before the bar ass, that's the bar association's federal district court, that's their Vegas, and today, so we're talking about that. They're trying to bring appeal. The prosecution wants to appeal the dismissal with prejudice from Judge Gloria Navarro. They want to bring Clive and Bundy, two of his sons. And I guess if they get that one, they'd go back after everybody else. And I think there's original 29 or 19 original defendants. There's a lot larger number considering the folks up in Oregon as well from the Malheur refuge occupation there. So anyways, Clive and Bundy, Ryan Bundy, Ammon Bundy, and Ryan Payne were the four in this Tier 1, which was the second trial, which was actually, I guess, the third trial because they had two before or three before and hung juries and... You know, the prosecution, they get to go along and I guess it's called jurisdiction shopping. A lot of times if they fail in one court, they can take it to another. Say, for instance, if you could go end up in federal court from beating a state charge and end up on a conspiracy charge. Usually federal charges generally involve conspiracy. They're dirty, real dirty. They manufacture the crimes. They facilitate the crimes. So, also, I'm going to talk. Lavoy Finicum was killed 3 years ago tomorrow. He was murdered on a lonely stretch of snow-banked highways in Oregon on his way to John Day. They were in caravan to go speak to the sheriff there in John Day County, and so they got ambushed along the way where there was no cell phone service, none of that kind of stuff. And then when the voice says, look, I'm going on to the sheriff, we'll talk more about that. You can follow me if you want to, and then he hit the dead man's roadblock up there, and we're going to see some of that video, and I want to point out some things. This was a setup from the start. Need to go to get this set up. Oh, I didn't even do an opening, so we listened to it earlier. Anyway, listened to an intro, but Elias Alias, I think is his spelled right. Then we're gonna get his channel, and he's got some. He's keeping up very well with some. What really needs to be done is, you know, of course, archiving all this stuff. And that it is, I have it also in my list. But here it is. You'll be able to see it downstream. It's a Lavoy Finicum, the first shot. So I go back over here and that'll come up. But we're going to be watching that. Let me come back over here. that opening, the intro, was the Danish National Symphony Orchestra. In The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And you'll see it here. Listen to it. It's pretty good. Whistlers and musicians and people with voices that are instruments in themselves. Okay, so let's go. Why was I at the U.S. Federal Court in Las Vegas at the Bundy Ranch trial? This question came to me from Africa. And Adidye, his name lives there, and asked me, what's going on? He wanted to know what's really going on. What really powers how the world system works and how it shapes the future? And to really answer this question, you have to read between the lines and figure out their code, language, their legalese, and keeping yourself out of the danger zone. So many people have fallen. We've got people in prison for the rest of their life for trying to do good and for the use of the wrong words that have put them in a claim jurisdiction, and they're locked away now. The list is long. of course, Jerry DeLemus and Todd Engel and Greg Burleson and Schaefer Cox, Bruce Doucette. Man, too bad they rolled you up in that. And they, you know what I seen in that? It was other people's action that people are being held accountable for. And this is unindicted co-conspirators, many that they would might claim that we are, myself among a great many others, possibly hundreds or thousands, just from the Bundy Ranch in the Oregon standoff. So what's really going on? It is a big consideration for our future here in America, or will we be treated like those in the other occupied countries across the world? Because we are under occupation. The feds have gone way beyond where they're supposed to be in their powers. Now, I know that some of the detractors would have something to say against that. I don't understand how you would say you guys are bad, but then other people that are trying to do the same thing that just have to be on the other side of the political spectrum, it's okay. I mean, left and right is wrong, right down the middle. Is the truth written? I think a couple of people might remember this, and I'll see if I can say it again. I took some of these words of my own, and I pulled a couple of other writers in here. So this is a paraphrase plagiarist publication of this. Is the truth written? Painted like a picture, hanging on the wall. A mirror, mirror, tell it all. Tell me how, tell me now. Found shattered, dying, the decay line. Raging in the light, torn, lovelorn, lost. Ne'er to go gently, ere the good night. And all flesh is as grass that withers, and all the glory of man is the flowers of the field that fade away. Some people might figure, well, I pulled a little bit of that out, but a good portion of that was me originally and adapting. So last January, U.S. District Chief Judge Gloria Navarro threw out the charges after finding prosecutors had withheld evidence from the defense in their case against Mr. Bundy, his sons Ammon and Ryan Payne. She dismissed the case with prejudice, meaning that the defendants cannot be tried again on the felony weapons and conspiracy charges from the armed 2014 standoff over grazing fees with the Bureau of Land Management in Bunkerville, Nevada. I've a couple of this here I've linked. So the this first one, I've had a little some edit there to make it current. Federal judge rebuked prosecutors for flagrant misconduct. And that link is going to open. Click. It's not going to open. What? Maybe I got to do a left click. Copy link. See, this is why I don't like Firefox so well. Doggone it. Really? Let me try the next one. That one worked. I wonder why the first one didn't. That was for our RLO, the realliberty.org, that I copied and linked there, Grimner, and it didn't open on a click. So. But here's, I think this one's from Washington Post. Now federal prosecutors plan to appeal their demoralizing defeat in the Nevada standoff trial. White, she is the assistant U.S. Attorney for Nevada, assured the court that the appeal would be filed by February 6th after asking for a 14-day extension. So they've had years. 2014, here we're coming up on 5 years since the raid, and far more than that, over near and probably 30 years that Clive and Bundy's been dealing with the Bureau of Land Management and their attempt to manage him out of business. Let's go look at this from, it is, oh, and I don't have Firefox. I got to turn the ads off. I'm not used to working this Firefox over here. Let me turn you off so I can look. And then they're going to want money from me, probably. Last month I had to pay the Washington Times. The Times or the Post? I think it was the Times, yeah, to be able to view their articles. And here it is. You'll be seeing it down the line. Let me just go take a look at how this is. playing off. Yeah, it's there where it's supposed to be. Good, good, good. From the Washington Times, Clive and Bundy stunning legal spanking of DOJ has feds scrambling for appeal. You know, Bundy attorney blast decision. That's Larry Klayman in the background. And there's Clavin with his hat on and got him a microphone. This was from, this picture was taken at the sheriff's department out front. Would have been January 10th. He was released on the 8th, and a bunch of folks converged. Yeah, there it is, January 10th. And who's the... Where is he talking about Ron Cavalier? Because he's not there. But anyways, says more. It's by Valerie Richardson in the Washington Times, Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019. Federal prosecutors said Wednesday they plan to appeal their demoralizing defeat in the Nevada standoff trial, which saw a federal judge rebuke prosecutors for flagrant misconduct and dismiss all charges against the rancher Clavin Bundy and his two sons, also including Ryan Payne, which she didn't list there. So here she is, Elizabeth O. White, Assistant U.S. Attorney for Nevada. She just needs a little more time. I tell you. There's the rest of it. You can see for yourself. I'll close that guy out. And back to the Bonder Gander. Victory. All of us lonely. It ain't a sin to want something better than to shake you in. You don't know how to win if you've never lost before. And to paraphrase, plagiarist heard it said, a little like that and more. And Trampled by Turtles, verse 1, part of that came from. And I have the clickable right here button, but I'm not going to include it into our broadcast for the copyright. But anyways, you can go listen to that. Back. I think Grimner or Moose Girls one turned me on to Trampled by Turtles. And just the name alone is so fitting for this tortoise two-step that we're having out here at in the West, the stocking horse hustle. It's all trick smoke and mirrors, ain't it, Rob? So under such an extended benefit of the Bar Association, the bare ass, the terror, the intimidation, and dread, there is no constitutional rights, no inalienable rights, no rights of man, nothing but the insult of being defined and treated as an animal, a property in commerce, a beast of burden. Hal Anthony from Behind the Woodshed. Thank you, Hal. Need to... If you don't know who Al Anthony is, you can find out. Come on along Sundays at noon on the left coast out there on the Pacific side of the world at 3 p.m. Eastern at Behind the Woodshed. And we'll find some notice in the news. We're being led along. Of course, you know, many of you probably know how the media works. And yeah, I found out firsthand that they're dirty. Dirty, dirty, dirty. And so that's why stepping up to press on, to be the true press for the truth to come out. This has been very unique. So many people, citizen journalists or whatever you want to call. So I've coming up here 5 years, 6 years. Yeah, 6 years doing radio in May. So I'm still, I wouldn't call myself professional. I'm always bumbling, but I'm doing what needs to be done is that being that firsthand account to give eyewitness, number 303 witness for the Bundys, and it's from 2014, and I went to witness, and I was continuing to witness when they removed me from the courtroom, being on the exclusionary list. As a witness, I was able to be in on some of the exculpatory hearings going on and this and that. But there's other people that were in there, like John Lamb and Kelly Stewart, that were doing the blogcast or the live feeds and had all the great information. And we had great writers, Terry from up at the Roseburg Beacon in Oregon, and Sherry Uvalli, and we've got, well, there's some good. I probably should have the list in front of me for leaving anybody else out. Matters How You Stand, thank Doug. Thanks, Doug Knowles, Matters How You Stand. He and Sherry are the absolute best in the for the alternate media. Well, let's just call us ourselves press. I think media has a little dirty little saying or sound to it. Certainly leaves a bad taste in my mouth. Now, we're going to scroll on down along here. We got to the ballad of Lavoie Finicum. That's When Cowboys Stand for Freedom. This is from Jordan Page. It's copyright 2018. And I went and spent $2 today and on the Amazon and purchased the two songs. And I think I might just pop this a little bit where it doesn't go too long. Now, there is free sites to listen to this song. You don't have to pay for it, but that's the great thing about libertarians, you know. If I got something and I've got it out there and it's available, then you can have it. And if you find value, then perhaps you'd like to purchase it. So I find value, so I purchased it. And let's see if I can open this guy here. Next comes the video. So that's not an openable either. Firefox and Chrome is so different. I'm not being able to click on it. That one will. I'm going to copy this. Let's just try it. This is Jordan Page's JordanPageMusic.com. And I'll open this other one. I don't know. I think we can play a 30-second clip from here, which would be great. Yeah, let me scroll down here. Where you at? That's a good song, War Machine, if you've never heard it. He's got some good songs. You guys might like to come check it out. So it's not on here, is it? Let me just open another. Where you at? Come here. All right. I'll just take it over here to where I know it's at. And then I would normally be in Chrome. They work so different, don't they? Firefox and Chrome, Spotify, the Ballad of Lavoie Finicum right here. And I have my Spotify connected on Chrome through a Facebook connection. So they're going to want me to log in because I'm not on the right one. Maybe not. Here we go. This should be a 30-second of it. The Ballad of Lavoie Finicum, A Cowboy Stand for Freedom. They're not going to let me do it without being signed in. I'll tell you what, I just tricked you out. How about that? Y'all won't be able to see it. Well, you can with Ben's. Where you at? I probably got you still open somewhere. My Amazon, is that where it is? Do-do-do-do. I'll just go to this then. Same address. I'll be signed in this way. How you doing, Ben? How's it looking over there? Oh, good. Oh, that's all right. Good, 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 good. We got some folks over there at the listening or chatting in. Good. Well, hi y'all that are gonna listen later, and those that are still over there, howdy howdy. I'm gonna play this. I think it's 30 seconds. No, this is let's see, 20. Yeah. All right, we're gonna play. I'm gonna go back to the beginning of it, and I'm gonna kill my mic here for a minute. We'll play. So This is of course for non-commercial use. We're not ripping off nobody. This is for all them things in the disclaimer of fair use. Let's listen. No, I'll kill this. I'll be right back. All right, 26 seconds. That's good. Right there. And I'll go back to Firefox for my video. You're still seeing whatever. Yeah, it was still there. So that's it right there. Go check out Jordan Page. He's on Facebook also. He's got a page there in his public profile as well. Page. So, all right, let me shut this one off. Go back over here. In order. Now, that is in honor of Lavoie Finicum, and Jordan Page is giving, I believe, half of everything that comes into Jeanette Finicum for her wrongful death suit and attorney's fees and all that stuff incurred in her battle. So, thank you, Jordan. Great guy. Appreciate it. And this is the eighth video in a series. They've been created by Kurt Cruz. The previous seven, they're linked here below. And there, thank you, Elias Alias. So number one is the deadly roadblock. Two is the foam bullet. Three is the planted gun. Two, shots the FBI lied about is four. Number five is shot with his hands in the air. Six is courage in the line of fire. Number seven, 5 minutes of shooting. And number eight, which is the Lavoie Finicum, the first shot video. And I do want to play that. So I'm going to click that. And so thanks to Kurt Cruz and to Elias Alias for the video. And also you can find the same over Readout News. We're gonna get down to Sherry Duvalli, share her link out here a little bit too. All right, let's try this. I had intended to mark this, but I don't think I'll play this whole thing because I got too much more. But let me run here just for a little bit, and I'll be back.
Shot at passenger Ryan Payne as he was holding out his hands to demonstrate he was not a threat and was merely talking with the police.
Okay. So what we're going to see here is Lavoie Finicum is going to be coming out of the, exiting his truck after the first initial stop, then he goes to that roadblock. So let's watch that. No, I was wrong. This is the first stop. This is he's informing them that he's going to meet the sheriff and John Day, and they could follow. Y'all can listen to this whole video. It'll be in the blog and the link. I don't want to come ahead. Oh, this is some very good information right here. Let's see. This is the speed chart from the first stop to the roadblock. So they gun it. Now the speed limit was 55, and it's since been raised to 55. He accelerated the speed just over 80. Now, so this is Lavoie's truck, and this the top red line right here. This is the pursuit vehicle, and this video talks about that. So it's what they did. They came up and behind them and pushed them along. You can hear in the video, I think it was Shauna says, they're coming up behind us. And so at this point, you come around, and you're seeing my cursor later, not live, but at this point, he sees the roadblock and starts shutting her down. Now, it was set up, and you'll see this, was set up for him to crash into that so they could open fire. You'll have to come back and listen to the whole video yourself. I'm just coming through here, parts of it, and highlight. So let's push play here. And I'm going to go ahead and just leave my mic hot. Not in the right place, am I? Okay, I'm going to move forward. I believe he's still talking about the pursuit. Yeah, you can see in the video, they're running. I don't remember how far that was. They traveled. They went in a long ways. So here he comes. He's in a straight stretch. He's approaching the blind curve. High snowbanks and stuff reduce visibility. And this video shows a lot of good stuff. You'll definitely have to come check out the Lavoie Finicum first shot from Elias. There he is. Breaking. Boom. I think they'll show that again. You've got to see this when he comes in. Watch. Here he goes. So here he comes in the white truck. He sees and he starts to brake. Now, he knows he can't stop. No, he's not braking. Here it is. Yeah. Now, he has to go to the roadside. That was really quick. We got to go back and stop that. Look at this cop run out in front of the truck. He's trying to get hit. So I'm playing it again. He's jumped in front of the truck. When it comes, I'm going to stop it. I wait for the downstream. We'll be able to take a closer little look at here. They're taking fire. All right. They've already taken shots. FBI agent Asteria, he got away with lying and opening fire. So they're shooting at him already. Now let me go play. Watch. Boom. Stop. You see that cop running out there into the snowbank? Where? Why would you run in front of the vehicle? Of course, he realizes how deep the snow is, and it's going to stop the forward progression of the vehicle. And I think he expected to just take it on the shoulder like a football player. And, of course, then he could have got him some disability, lay around, and suck it up off the taxpayer money. But look at him. He's jumping in front of the vehicle, and at the very last second, he would have been hit had it not been that Lavoie was able to pull just enough to the left a little bit more to avoid him. I'm pushing play again. Boom. Ah, we didn't quite get it. That's all right. You can see it. Let me try to just back it up. 10 seconds. 10 seconds. Play again. 10. See if I can stop it right in time. You can slow your speed down and all that, and look at this on the original There. I think I caught it. He was able to pull just enough the last minute to avoid hitting that guy. You'll see, too, it'll be coming up. Let me see if I can get to it ahead. Yeah, you can't. This is talking about you can't see what's going on. I'm probably talking over this video and messing it up. I'll let it play for a minute. Pointing out all the locations of these guys. See if we can get to the shot. There's the murder of the boy Finnegan. Let me go back just a little bit more, I think. Let that play. No, Kate, it's just for the afterwards. It'll be put to video. You'll be able to see it then. So I'm only trying to describe it. You get, once y'all, I'll include the link, and you'll be able to see this video yourself. I'm going to stop it now. You watch the rest. You can see how it was all set up to push him into so they could kill him. And a lot of things happened that they didn't die that day. All of them. LaVoy got out of the truck. Let me just go ahead and I'll add what I observed in all this. After the roadblock and LaVoy gets out, he walks, he goes away from the truck, drawing fire away from the truck. This has been discussed by a few of us. You know, no Twitter over there. And they're saying, well, LaVoy was trying to commit suicide by cop. But he knew the possibilities in this engagement, what the police would do to him and kill him, and he would not be deterred by fear of death. And then he did, I believe it was a sacrifice to draw them fire away from the truck. But that didn't last very long because they did open back up on the truck, lethal and non-lethal. Ryan Bundy was shot through the shoulder. That was probably one of the initial volleys as they were approaching from Stereo. That was probably his bullet. Ryan still has it, I think. I don't believe he's had it removed yet. All right. I'm going to come back over. And if you guys in chat are following along here at the reallibertymedia.com, the Ponder Gander page, you can see where I'm at. And later on down in the video, you'll be able to see everything that I was seeing. And that Ben is seeing. All right, let me come on down. Here is our readout. In this video, Kurt Cruz looks into the fact that LaVoy was murdered while both his hands were in the air and in a gesture of compliance and surrender. His hands clearly held no weapon. Kurt Cruz felt that this video was necessary in light of the fact that the government continues its attempt to justify murdering LaVoy. And you can click this right here. You'll be able to get over and see Readout News, their web, and on Twitter. Sherry Duvalli, thank you for a great place. And become the media. Take back your future. Thanks, Jules, for that. And that carries over to my WordPress. And here's journalism. I took this from I forget, he's a mainstream. He said, journalists need defense. And I say journalism, and then I added in parentheses, truth needs defense. And be the media. And there I am, Vinny Online. That's, you know, you can find all the places that I be and works I've done. I called in and I spoke with Ammon Bundy yesterday on his broadcast, The Liberty Effect, and with Brian Hyde as producer. And I think that'll probably come out on SoundCloud by Monday. So anyways, I'll get into a little bit of what we spoke about, but first a little of this. Because of the media, and that was my point, be the media. James Madison wrote, "Without popular information or the means of acquiring it, it is but a prologue to a farce or a tragedy, or perhaps both. It's up to all of us to ensure that this prologue is never written and to fight the true enemy of the people, attacks on truth itself." From James Madison. Founding fathers understood the importance of journalism. Thomas Jefferson hoped for a republic governed by reason and truth, brought about by the freedom of the press, because the press is the first, they are the ones that are first shut up by those who fear the investigation of their actions. He reasoned it needed our protection. So there's the Liberty Effect at Ammon Bundy from yesterday. I'm paraphrasing him, what does one do when the government won't follow the law? This is from the Liberty Effect. Ammon Bundy, Brian Hyde, January 24 of 2019. I found this, and it kind of sums up a little bit about, and you can see, you can't listening live, but a lot of little periods, and I broke all this stuff, and this is another of my paraphrased plagiarism that's squashed down, and it comes from Alexandre Solzhenitsyn. So I assume he's a Russian, da? And it says in compressed form, "If only it were all so simple to separate and destroy the line dividing good and evil, that passes not through states nor between classes, but through every man's heart, impossible to expel from the world, it is in its entirety, impossible to expel from the world in its entirety, but it is possible within each of us. And at what point then should one resist?" I put all that together December 14th of 2015. And I'd come across that. So I brought that in. I thought it was it fit really well with Ammon's question. And Ammon Bundy is the host of The Liberty Effect each Thursday on the Loving Liberty Radio Network. I host such people as Brian Hyde, Kate Daly, and there's a new guy here. Oh, I forget his name, but I listened to his first show. It's pretty good. Loving Liberty. So I would call libertarian views best description. Sorry, I was distracted. I had an incoming over there on the side. Well, I guess that'll be in the video. Thank you, Sire Reeve. A lot of people think he might call him a troll, or he's been called worse. I've been engaged with many of these people that are called trolls, and I found that many of these people are real people. They have a different ideology than those that might typically be described as Bundy supporter. They see a different idea, and Hal Anthony really talks effectively to this deception. You know, it looks like people are, you know, wanting to save the land, save the animals, preservation, but it's really, really just a hijacking. And I was talking about that a while ago. You know, I kind of fear this, the Roger Stones and the Lucas Oils, these big monies, if we take all this from the federal government and give it over to the state and then they dole it out to, are we going to be any better off? And so we definitely need protections. We need environmental protections in certain sensitive areas, but I'm going to come down to cattle or the tortoise and the hare hoof and hide the truth. We're going to talk a little bit more about this. The cattle actually are a great benefit out in the desert, especially. in their browsing in. I'll tell you what will happen here. This field out here, there's nothing grazing on it where I'm at right now. So what's happening, it's growing up in briars and small trees, and eventually it would, you know, just be forested over it. It's a big difference here than in the desert, of course, but what happens out there in the desert, the cattle graze and browse and like trimming back the bushes, you know, and then you got much more succulent growth that comes out from the new shoots, more palatable to other animals, wildlife that would normally not be able to, it wouldn't be palatable for them. They wouldn't be able to process it, the roughage that a cow can. And then what does the old cow do? He eats it up and poops it out right there on the ground. And then what happens? The old tortoise comes along. And you know what? He likes it. That's right. It's true. Some people might not think that is, but I'll show you in a little bit later on that it is true. Now, I did talk to Ammon, and he said, what would I do? I said, I'll tell you what I did then in 2014 and 2017, 2018, as I went to be witness. Yeah. Hawk, I had a, this is my friend, I won't tell his name. He goes by Gooberzilla over here at RLM. He's my friend Hawk. And, yeah, a cardboard sign. I meant to pull a picture to include that. Maybe I'll have to go get that and put it in the blog. Me and my cardboard sign. But I did, thank you, Grimner. He helped me shrink my cardboard sign down into one that you could just hang around your neck with a laminated piece of paper. That's what I called it. A laminated piece of paper. I figure my identification and notification is as good as anything that they can give me from the state. But I did have to show a what are these national ID thing that they've got tied in Homeland Security to be able to get in the state, I mean a federal courthouse to fly. You've got to have one of these national IDs now that they're all tied together. They're phasing out the state ones. You still get a state driver's license ID without all that extra, but it won't do you any good to move about for long. Force, slow, get people to come along on their own, and once you get enough people on board, then make it mandatory. A couple of things I want to address here that was failed. Injustice for the Bundy et al. And this is the Sixth Amendment. It says in all criminal prosecution, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy trial and a public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, and to have a compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Thank you on freedomroad.info, where I pulled that from. Of course, you know, Sixth Amendment's everywhere, but I just want to include because they were so good enough to share something with me, and I went to check out their site, and that was there, and it was appropriate to go with my content here. This comes, well, let's see if, who the first one, see there's a delay, so it'll take a while for me to notice in chat. Let's see who picks up on who this is speaking first. All our libertarian and anarcho-capitalist, whatever little title you got on yourself, we'll probably be more closer to get this. Okay, well, here it is. It is manifest, therefore, that the jury must It is manifest, therefore, that the jury must judge of and try the whole case and every part and parcel of the case, free of any dictation or authority on the part of the government. They must judge of the existence of the law, of the true exposition of the law, of the justice of the law, and of the admissibility and weight of all the evidence offered. Otherwise, the government will have everything its own way. The jury will be mere puppets in the hands of the government, and the trial will be, in reality, a trial by the government and not a trial by the country. By such trials, the government will determine its own powers over the people instead of the people's determining their own liberties against the government. And it will be an entire delusion to talk, as for centuries we have done, of this trial by jury as a palladium of liberty and or as any protection to the people against the opposition and tyranny of the government. Has anybody said it? So I guess we've got a cardboard sign that's come downstream. What do we got here, cowboy? Hey, thank you. Yep, that's our friend Ben, Sound Minds. He's streaming it right now. Duh, I could have told you guys here. What a duh. That's a big duh moment. Yeah, thank you, cowboy. Why didn't I think of that? So you can actually see what I'm seeing. Yeah, go. Stay in chat and open up the YouTube. It is, Sound Minds. You can find it like that. So, anybody know who that was? Who was I talking about? It is manifest, therefore, that the jury must judge of and try the whole case. What happens in these state and federal courts, district courts, anyone? They've got the rules, and what are the rules for? The rules are in their favor. Definitely in their favor. And what they had to go through in this the Bundy Ranch trial, how much they could not... They were muted. They were gagged. Ryan Payne. They can't say there was a sniper. Why not? There were snipers. And then my conversation to Twitter earlier this morning. I'm trying to say that they wasn't. Oh, well, they were just on standby to be snipers. But no, the broadcast from Ammon yesterday, I think is where there's a lot of information there. Straight from the court's records that this stuff that had been previously hidden that they finally got turned over, and everybody knew from 2014. We all knew there were snipers. We had pictures of them then. We knew there was listening devices. None of this was a secret. But somehow, by the power of the prosecution, they can exclude it. And yeah. Myrie and Sheese and Ahmed, and I think Navarro certainly in collusion, and it just got so bad she couldn't cover it up anymore, and she had to dump it, trying to save herself. So yeah, these guys were definitely covering up on purpose. She said as much. Let me grab my notebook. Let's see here. We got a few pages I ain't even looked at yet that I wrote. So this is two or three different broadcasts I've never run through it to. It's from Loving Liberty. This is a Brian Hyde's radio. So the Brian Hyde Show. I didn't put the date on here, but one show he's talking about meeting a homeless man and somebody was stealing his stuff. And he says, just let them have it. Maybe they need it more than me. Give it away. And should college be free? So if you want to search that out, Brian is a very well-spoken, highly intelligent, somebody that I can look up to and say, I'd like to be like that guy right there. Him and Emma are a lot alike. In another broadcast, I was going to open this up, and I didn't. There ought to be a law. I actually should. Can I find it? I'm not. I'm going to... Doggone it. It's Firefox. Gets me. I'm going to have to go to Chrome to get into it. I know. I'm going to go to SoundCloud and the Brian Hyde Show. And what was the date? This was the second hour of... didn't I write the date down here? Surely I did. Surely I didn't. Awesome things. Yeah, there's a... Really, I ran it out for like 5 minutes, and then I jumped back in my notes here to play. So here, you won't be able to see this in my video, but you are seeing it on Sound Minds as they're streaming live right now. I'm over here at the SoundCloud dot SoundCloud.com. This is a still listing. They're going to work this out. The Joe Carey Show sets, the Brian Hyde shows, the long title across there. Now let me see some really good broadcasts. And these are going back. These there's several I've listened to. This one I'd recommend very highly. Loving Liberty with Brian Hyde and Self Defense. Knowing, is it going to be able to let me see it? Knowing when to act, but covering yourself. If somebody breaks in your house and you kill them, you may still be charged with manslaughter or murder or anything. You can't shoot them and drag them in the house is some of the things he talked about in there. So we've got Brian Hyde and Jordan Peterson. He's got some good guests in there, some very sound minds as well. Let's see if I can find. Am I going the right direction? I am going to December. We'll come into January. Scrolling all the way down here to see. Is it on the? Come on, 17th, I believe it was. The second hour. Yeah. Okay. And I would have hit like on it. I'm pretty sure. I think it was the 17th. I meant to write that down. So I'm going to have to skip that. I'm going to come back to that because I don't want to spend the time looking for it. But I'll bring that back into in perhaps next week's podcast. So during the show, Ammon asked, what do people do when government won't follow the law? He says that Navarro certainly wasn't our friend. And he went on to say that there's just too much for Gloria, that she had to cut ties. Her words were grossly shocking, and we find it happening in courts all the time. It's the normal, and it's not the exception, this prosecutorial misconduct, Brady and Giglio violations. I don't know. You know, we got an hour. I've got a lot to cover yet, and it may require even to following out the links and lists and all that, because I really didn't get this exactly set. Without my splitter, I can't hear what's playing, and having this mic, I guess I could switch headset, but I didn't want to do that. I want to stay. So, working through it as we go. Let me look over at chat. Anybody say anything? Killing ducks. And Goob did say something about my cardboard sign. And Grimner said something. Where'd it go? I think it in Frumpy had something to say too. I think that was Frumpy. He was talking about the cardboard sign. Yeah. Alright. Squirrel. That's for you, Grammy. Grammy Murray. She's on at 6 o'clock Central tonight on this Freakers Friday, and Grimner and Moose Girl coming along a little later at 10 p.m. Central Time. And Flasheroo, he'll be along for the Dork Table tomorrow at about noon, and we'll go through the schedule here in a little bit. All right, let's see where we're at. Okay, so the prosecutor, I was talking about this, prosecution won't allow certain evidence before the jury. You should have seen how that went. I mean, the jury was the courtroom far less than they were outside, and then they didn't want them to know it. Why would any court, any judge, any prosecutor in their sacred duty exclude any information? I think even if it doesn't apply, as they might claim, it should be allowed. If I wanted to, let's say I was charged with jaywalking out here in the country. It's like, you didn't go down to the border to cross in the crosswalk, la-di-da. And I said, well, I think I had to cross right here out of, and let's just go back to reality. We're in the city, and I get a ticket from a cop for jaywalking because I felt like it was impertinent to be able to get across the street without having to go down. And maybe I was trying to catch a bus. Maybe somebody was being robbed, and maybe I ran over to help, or any number of reasons. And, you know, a lot of people are idiots, so doggone, can't let them cross the street on their own. That's the world we live in anymore. I guess I need to get on back over here to Firefox. We'll come back on do that again. Win at all costs. That's what it is. That's their. That's how they do it. So, Judge Navarro went on to say that the. That they were denying even that the FBI was involved. Now that's brought out. That was some more lies. The FBI was involved. And matter of fact, their threat assessment said that they didn't have to worry about the Bundys being violent. So also, she said that there was a universal sense of justice that had been violated. Flagrant misconduct, substantial prejudice, and the win at all costs. That's how they worked that out. She also said they willfully failed to disclose the documents and other. You know what they did? They had maybe a thumb drive file or something like that, and have terabytes of information. I think there was a total of 4 terabytes of information altogether from evidence from the prosecution. And so they would hide stuff like that was relevant, and they'd put it off in, say, like maybe a financial report of expenditures for lunch for the month or whatever, and they'd put stuff. Now that's deception, and that's what they did. So, with the assistant U.S. attorney, showed bad faith, and he was guilty of withholding evidence. In the beginning, it was claimed that there were some 1,000 pages withheld. Containing Brady and Giglio violations, and turned out to be much, 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 much more than that. She went on to say he did not meet the responsibility upon him. And okay, yeah. And so Ammon, he says, you know, these people that committed crimes, they were trying to take these people's lives. Shut off. Oh, dang, Grimner. Where's it playing? Whoops. Must be over on. Oh, dang it. I see what happened. Thank you, Grimner. Thanks, Chloe. I'll see you, Chloe the Hippie. Well, I hope that didn't ruin it. I had another player going on the doggone it. When I opened up the SoundCloud, it started playing. Didn't realize it, so. But there it is. Let me back where I'm at. Ba-bum. Yep, that the violations and that the state did not meet its responsibility. And that Emma was talking about how these criminals, these prosecutors and agents that were committing these crimes and... anywhere from civil right violations, you've got criminal, you've got procedural and, agency rules. All of this stuff was being violated. And like I said, listen, when the 24th of the January episode of The Liberty Effect comes out, and Ammon lists off all that pretty well. It's long, 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 long. All right, so I've come to the end of that, and these notes are for Mama Bear, but I'll come back to that. And I'm gonna pretty much abbreviate that. I don't think I was done with those notes, but I threw them away anyways. I'll get them. let's see. Yeah, Mama Bear. We'll get to her in a little bit. We'll get to her. All right, the stalking horse rides again. The BLM was set on killing what it could. These governments rustling hustle of the West and the last rancher standing. That is, from me, the stalking horse. That's a tricky little guy right there. The dog and pony show. Here's the WordPress, the last rancher standing from me, November 15th, 2017, and I'm only a little bit better at writing than I was, so this is all without edit. I'll be interested to come back through and see if I can rewrite better as I pull all this together. So for me, this is who led the raid on the Bundy Ranch and what kind of management Clive and Bundy didn't want a contract with. The stalking horse rides again. Yes, it does. The tortoise two-step was a tune set for the Bundy Ranch raid. First they came for the tortoises and then the horses. Well, maybe they came for the farmers and then the rancher. Who are they coming for next? Who is next? Why nobody died in Bunkerville, in Nevada in 2014? It is because of all those that came that day and stood in the gap. Who, what, when, and where, and why, and how? Right in order. Please tell the whole truth, please, Mr. Myrie, I say. USDC Court, District Court of Nevada, AUSA. He got let go. Continuing. So this is, that's why I said first they came for the tortoise and then for the horse. So they euthanized, I forget how many tortoises that they had rounded up. Yeah, big tortoise roundup, yeehaw. And they had killed them. So they're trying to save tortoises and then they kill them. And here's a similar action. I think this came, well, no, I guess that's from Maxine. BLM calls for shooting 90,000 healthy wild horses. On Thursday, the National Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board recklessly voted to approve recommendations that call on the Bureau of Land Management to, shoot the horse, shoot them. From Maxine Whipple. I think this is extra bleeding in there. Anyways, I'll go. Right on past. I'm done with that. Kill that. Back to the Ponder Gander page. Standing up for freedom, whatever it takes. The Bundy Ranch trial report. This is from Wendy and Holly. Thank you guys. This was one of my earlier videos at the court out for giving updates of what's going on inside the courtroom. And this was the day that Ryan Bundy's opening statements with the history behind the why in the Bundy Ranch. And why did they have to stand? Well, some decades they were coming to put them off the land. You think 20 years had been enough time to do it, to wait them out, let them fall off to attrition. But unfortunately for the federal government, the Bundys raise hardworking folks that aren't scared to stay out there on land. You think Clive and Bundy's this wealthy rancher, this millionaire rancher? That's what they call him. Funny. You can find out. He's just a simple man. So the setup for the takedown, the stalking horse and the tortoise two-step and the Bundy Ranch raid, government aggression and usurpation, whatever it takes. Is that a threat or determination? Because I tried to use that, whatever it takes. They said, well, what are you willing to do? Whatever it takes. I'm going to do whatever it takes. Does that imply a threat? No, I say determination. Forced out, rights versus privilege, and homestead, water, and grazing rights. That's what we're looking at. Things that are owned, property. And that's all been changed, of course, in their definition. No moo in 92 and cattle free by 93, they say. The cattle gather costs some $6 million and over $100 million. And I heard a much higher number than that later on. They say here, $100 million for the trial. So thanks again, Wendy and Holly. I'll pop it open just so we'll take a looky see. And you can see a 9-minute video. It's in the Real Liberty Media YouTube channel and the layoff list. Stand up for freedom, whatever it takes. Y'all come check it out. Hi, Wendy. And you're not, if you're over there with sound minds, you've seen it. Ryan Bundy's opening statements and two more of what I just said there. So, this, I've got a long string of videos here that cut to clips, and without having the ability to listen at the same time it's playing real time. I think I'm going to probably have to leave these off to you, the listener, to open yourself. I'll just pop them open and read them, a couple of them, just so we can see them. Bad faith and repercussions. There's nothing that guarantees the conviction of an innocent man more than bad lawyers. Now, there's some quoting I've done from this video, and it's let's just open it up. Also, the check and balance on prosecutorial misconduct, whereby a law for the public defender to go before the grand jury and to indict prosecutors. This was something that was suggested by somebody in the audience to indict prosecutors, police officers, judges, public officials. Is edited for clarity. I believe it was a caller, what participant there. Then we have egregious intentional. What happened? Egregious intentional misconduct. And what it is a free pass for the prosecution. Oh, there you go. I see what you're doing. You did it. That's been. I say, hey. My mouse is running around my cursor. Egregious international misconduct. Free pass for the prosecution, a.k.a. the role of the advocate, and polluting the jury pool, and one way how the state sets public opinion is all in that. But I'll go ahead and just open this video so we can have it to see. That's the short of it. And they're all marked in this video to open up in the appropriate time-stamped area. Like I said, I can't hear it. Wait a minute. I'm cheating. All right. So this is, let me kill it. This is prosecutorial ethics and the right to a fair trial. The role of the Brady Rule, Session 3. This is from the case for Western Reserve University School of Law, January 26th of 2007. There's Speaker... Barry Scheck, the director of the Innocent Project, and is presented by, as I said, the case Western Reserve Law Review. Summary: the is the Innocent Project in the criminal. I guess I should read the whole thing. The Law Review Symposium: The Innocence Project in the Criminal Justice System. Barry is a professor of law at the Benjamin in Cardoza School of Law in New York City, where he has served for more than 27 years and is the co-director of the Innocence Project. He is the emeritus director of the Clinical Education, co-director of the Trial Advocacy Programs, and the Jacob Burm Center for the Study of Law and Ethics. Professor Scheck received his undergraduate degree from Yale University in 71, and his JD from Bolt Hall School of Law. And so there's the rest of it. It's a lot to read there. It is a, of course, these guys are lawyers and judges and all that, but it is a very, very good video for learning. And that's why, you know, I'm certainly not a lawyer. Don't ever want to be, but you got to understand how this stuff works and to avoid getting yourself caught up in it. All right, we'll come on to I believe this is a second video. I'm going to click it here and see. Or is this the same one? I think it's different, pretty sure. Let me see. Yeah, it is. This is Prosecutors Run Amok. I have, I'll come back over there in a minute. And it's from the Federalist Society, and they say the Supreme Court has instructed in clear terms that the duty of the federal prosecutor in a criminal prosecution is not that it shall win a case, but that justice shall be done. Berger versus United States, 295 U.S. 1935. The news pages were filled with examples of federal prosecutorial overreach. In its term just ended, the Supreme Court reversed 6 of 7 criminal convictions that reached it. That's a lot of getting overturned. Imagine how many didn't reach the court to be overturned. it's true today too. Maybe not 9 out of 10, but I'm going to say probably maybe 9 out of 10. Yeah, I said that. You can see more of her. It'll be in the link. And as I said, this I cut to a few different spots in here, which is adjudicated civil and administrative matters versus prosecution in broad generalized regulatory schemes by Congress. Dismiss indictments for failure to prove the crime. Ethical corruption. A cadre of prosecutors. Take it or leave it. I had fair dinkum, but I pulled it out of there. I had original posting and I added that. Fair dinkum. Fair trade, you know. That's what they're insinuating. And then, the funny lawyers. What was his joke? I think it was something about, we got to get paid, you know. Untainted assets, lawyer jokes. Yeah, you can't go, that's what I think it was. You can't go seizing all their civil forfeiture and stuff because they've got to be able to have some money to pay the defense lawyer. And no, everybody thought that was so funny. Absolute immunity for prosecutors. Seems like it is, isn't it? Thanks, Cowboy Tech. I took this and put it up there with thanks to you. What does it say? It's a picture here, or meme, from Milton Friedman. Excuse me. Government has three primary functions. It should provide for military defense of the nation. It should enforce contracts between individuals. It should protect citizens from crimes against themselves or their property. When government, in pursuit of good intention, tries to rearrange the economy, legislate morality, or help special interests, the cost comes in inefficiency, lack of motivation, and loss of freedom. Government should be a referee, not an active player. Well, that's what they're supposed to be, but they are the active player. They're the ones in control, unfairly, very, very unfairly. This is a video. It's on Facebook. It's a federal court system closure that the Lavoie-Finicum wrongful death suit was delayed amidst this government shutdown. It will be there included in the broadcast link. I need a drink. And then we're going to move to the tortoise. Since he's so slow, we can take our time, right? I think I really actually need a minute. Let me let you guys listen to the lawyer joke, and I'll mute my mic and set myself up here. What do I need to do? Open sesame. And like I said, I can't hear it, so I forget when to stop for the entirety. It's not very long, but there it is. It's coming and coming, and as soon as it plays, I'll mute this mic and be right back in a minute. There it is. What do you say, Ben? I feel a lot better about this one today than I have the first two. Oh, okay. Oh, good, good, good. Good, good, good. Coco. Pardon. Doobie talk. Oh, whoa, about dropped it. I missed 420. I've rectified that. All right, I'll have a drink and then I'll be ready. Good, good. Right on. All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you, thank you. All right. So that was that. I don't know how much, I'm pretty sure you heard the lawyer joke. They thought it was real funny to take people's money. Leave them enough to pay us. Hey, we're all on the same side, right? All work for the Bar Association. Uh-huh. Okay, so here I am going back down. Yes, yes, yes. We're at the tortoise and the hare, hoof, and hide the truth. That's how I kind of cut it in here. It's the desert tortoise in relation to cattle grazing. And that's from Vernon Bostick. And it is covers some historical evidence of over 300 years of tortoise and cattle cohabitation. We'll see the early history. This other one I'm definitely going to have to... I'm going to go here first, but we're going to... After that, we're going to go to this so-called best science expert that doesn't even know that cattle have cloven hooves. Incredible. And this guy... Oh, just wait till you see. But first, let's go to the tortoise. We're going to talk about this. It's a pretty long read. I had intended on reading it all, and I may or may not. Waiting for it. Yeah. I know. My choppy the last, and they did like go low and high. Very bad audio. So I'm running the Audacity record and also the, it's called the video recording at the same time too, and the OBS. So that's all recording. And so trying to just make sure I got some extra files to work with. And so anyways, this is the tortoise, desert tortoise in relation to cattle grazing. Early history, the desert tortoise has an... I got something playing, or is that somebody? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm hearing you in my... Never mind, I'm good. Okay. So the desert tortoise has inhabited the Mojave and Sonoran deserts in the southwestern United States and Mexico for thousands of years. For the past three or four centuries, that is, the desert tortoise has shared its habitat in Mexico and California with cattle. There is no information on tortoise abundance in pioneer days, but we do have good information on cattle abundance and range conditions a century ago. The buildup in livestock numbers in the 1870s and 80s, which is well documented in Arizona, that's Griffiths 1901, Thornbearer 1910, that occurred all over the western range. Stoddard and Smith, 1955, estimated that about 85% of livestock on the range perished in the late 1880s. We know that that desert tortoises survived this severe overgrazing because they did not become extinct. Makes sense. World War I encouraged a second buildup in range livestock numbers. beef sold at a high, it sold at high prices, and the range was free. Universal overgrazing was the inevitable result. The decade of the 30s was ushered in by the severest drought of record. In addition to peak numbers of livestock, the western range was plagued by hordes of rabbits, rodents, and grasshoppers. That's from Voorhees and Taylor, 1933. I believe these is the build-up to the Taylor Grazing Act, this Taylor here, author. So ranchers burned the spines off cactus in an attempt to save their cattle from starvation. Death losses from starvation and invading poisonous plants were severe. The destruction of the western range is documented in the Senate document 199, U.S. Forest Service, 1930. let me scroll a little bit here. In view of the concern expressed by some people for the past 10 years, it is amazing that any tortoise survived the many years of unregulated livestock grazing that preceded enactment of the Taylor Grazing Act of 1934. From a single census in a single year, Schneider, 1980, drew the following conclusions. Number one, that the population is declining rapidly towards extinction, that overgrazing by cows is responsible. Three, the desert tortoise should be listed as endangered. Four, that their habits should be closed to grazing. Schneider summed up in his report with this statement: the outlook for the future of the species, the desert tortoise, in the state, Arizona, appears grim. Not our grim. Grim's great. Little inside joke for our chatters. Mortimer and Schneider, 1983, since a desert tortoise population with the highest density known in Nevada. Maybe I should try reading that again. Okay, the highest density in Nevada. The data showed a 45% increase in population over a census made 5 years before, scrolling back up, before another biologist. Okay, 5 years before another biologist. Nevertheless, Mortimer recommended that this habitat be closed to cattle grazing for 15 years so the desert population could recover. He summed up his report with this statement: habitat and wildlife managers must determine if livestock grazing operations can coexist with tortoise and other wildlife on the Mojave Desert biome. Now we're to the Taylor Grazing Act of 1934, and it ended the free-for-all, get all you can while you can, uncontrolled grazing, which had destroyed the range resources on the public domain. There's no doubt about that. I mean, the cheek grass, there's all kinds of invasive species. Some is edible at other times of years, and some are not. I've got to wonder, the Jimson weed, I wonder if that was native to the West. And I made a mistake. I said the sagebrush at one time, and I was meaning to say the tumbleweed, the Russian thistle, was not native to the West. It's so iconic, right? Hey, what's happening? 192, doggone it. I got something new open over here. Get back. My finger was wandering. I lost my all right, I'll just come back over here to the Taylor Grazing Act. So, sorry about that. So, 50% roughly was made in reductions in amount of livestock use permitted. Permitted use today is only about 10% of the livestock use that occurred during the free-range days. If the conservative grazing management that is being practiced today has, hold on, I had to reach the other computer for it to shut down. And I've lost myself again. Where am I? Okay. So let me start here. If the conservative grazing management that is being practiced today has such a detrimental impact on desert tortoise populations, how could the species have survived through all those years of uncontrolled livestock grazing? Dr. Kristen Berry interviewed all the longtime residents in the Mojave and Sonoran deserts she could find and questioned them about the abundance of desert tortoises years ago. From the following quotation is from Dr. Berry's Tortoises for Tomorrow. Longtime desert residents in California noticed extraordinary densities in the early 30s that could have been as high as 2,000 tortoises per square mile. 2,000, that's a lot. That's a lot of tortoises. Or turtles. A turtle is a tortoise, but I guess we need to be specific. It's not a terrapin, but a turtle is a tortoise, or a tortoise is a turtle, and a terrapin is a turtle, and all that. But anyways, it's a tortoise. It's a turtle. Walks around, you know, everybody knows about the turtle. The tortoise in the hair, that is. So the evidence that Dr. Berry accumulated is ample to support her conclusion, but I will review only one interview. A member of a survey party in Antelope Valley in 1933 saw over 100 tortoises in one place at one time. He told Dr. Berry that tortoises were everywhere, all over the ground. A density of 2,000 tortoises per square mile is 3 tortoises per acre. The year 1933 was the third year of the Great Drought and the culmination of years of overgrazing by livestock. Let's assume that forage production was 90 pounds per acre. On an overgrazed desert range in a drought year, this is a liberal estimate. Cattle were starving. He says we can assume that they grazed the range as closely as possible. This means that cattle would have consumed about 90% of the forage produced. If there were any sheep on the range, forage used by livestock, getting covered over there, hi, Oregon Public Broadcast notification. Cattle were starving. We can assume that they grazed the range as closely as possible. This means that cattle could have consumed about 90%. You know, I read that. Let's get back down. At the very most, there were only 3 pounds of forage left for each tortoise for the year. But in the early 30s, western ranges were overrun by jackrabbits. This is some Voorhees and Taylor 1933. And heavily infested with grasshoppers. Grasshoppers feed all day, jackrabbits all night. Tortoises about 7 hours per week. If the weather is not too hot or too cold for them to leave their well-insulated burrows. Calculated from data presented from Nagy and Medica 1986. While livestock, jackrabbits, and grasshoppers were busy grubbing the range to stave off starvation, the tranquil tortoise whiled away the time snoozing in its burrow. Then how did they survive? Easy enough, it says. They used a different food source. Can you guess what that food source is going to be yet? The toothless tortoise. I couldn't. Oh, this is great. I love how the words come together like that. Anybody familiar with what I do? I try to do it. The toothless tortoise. I'm so going to use that. The toothless tortoise is ill-equipped to harvest and masticate range forage. The tortoise can harvest only tender vegetation, and it can't masticate even that. The tortoise can't produce enough bulky, low-analysis forage fast enough to meet its nutritional requirements. That's again from Nagy and Medica, 1986. They solved this problem long ago, and I've talked about this, and it all makes perfect sense. We'll get to that. They solved this problem long ago. They allow other animals to do it for them. That's right. Desert tortoises feed primarily on dung. The more animals used in the range, the more dung. Makes sense. Which makes more food available for tortoises. Makes sense. In the millennia preceding the advent of domestic livestock on the range, tortoises subsisted on pellets excreted by rabbits, deer, and bighorn, and scats of predators. I don't know that they probably would. My brother's wife has a tortoise, and that thing, it has a voracious appetite. But, you know, she chops it up in the food, and she didn't feed him no dung. I was going to try to sneak some, and, well, she would have come undone if she'd done that. I was going to give her tortoise some poopy. But, yeah, they do eat the poop. And I've talked about this before, but I've seen a video, and I've never been able to find it again. It was Africans were eating fresh poop, and it was for the nutrition. And there's the cow has four stomachs, it's ruminated. It's still, even though it's gone through four stomachs, you know, it's not extracted all that. I think, what did Clive and Bundy, he told me maybe half. There's still or more, maybe 65%, half or 65% of the nutrients inside the poop. What is it? It's just, you know, salad, I guess, mushy salad. So it goes on through. But anyways, these Africans was eating it, and I suppose if you could not catch a cow, and it did come along, it's fresh poopy, you could use that to not starve to death. Some people might find that pretty nasty to think about, but if it's good for the tortoise. Okay, where are we back to? In the millennium, Mount of Dung. Okay, in the millennium preceding the advent of domestic livestock on the range, they did, we was talking about, and on predators. So tortoise population adjusted to the amount of dung available. Their numbers were low. That comes from Mulhausen, 1854. The Western Regional Extension, publication number 39, by products and unusual feedstuff in livestock rations. That's Baff et al., 1980, states, it is commonly estimated that 80% of the total nutrients and feeds are excreted, pooped out by animals as manure. 80%, this says here. It's even higher numbers than I was assuming. So the desert tortoise is well adapted for making use of cow dung. 4 days elapsed between meals. This allows plenty of time for the tortoise to complete the digestion that began in the cow's stomach. The digested food moves slowly, ever so slowly, through the tortoise intestines. The toothless tortoise intestines. Now, this trip takes 17 days, says Nagy and Medica, 1986. It is a biological law that all organisms tend to increase to the limits of their food supply. Therefore, it is natural and to be expected that the tortoise, numbers and livestock numbers peaked on the public domain at the same time. Excuse me a minute. Thank you. it is a biological law that all organisms tend to increase in the, yes, and livestock, and to where it is also a natural law that if the food supply is diminished but for any population, the population will adjust to come in balance with the reduced food supply. For 50 years, BLM has been reducing the numbers of livestock permitted on the federal range, they call. For 50 years, desert tortoise population have been declining. Now, here we are, Beaver Dam Mountains. This isn't far from over around the Mesquite and Bunkerville and between there up in St. George, Utah, the Virgin River through there and then around, and so Beaver Dam and all around. But anyway, so the Beaver Dam Mountains, we can be fairly certain that before the Mormon colonization of this area in the late 1850s, Beaver Dam Mountains in Utah, I think I was in the wrong place, in Utah was a Joshua tree savanna and a bunch grass understory similar to portions of the McCullough Mountains in Nevada that have been grazed. Have never been grazed, I'm sorry, for lack of water. That's Bostick, 1973. Because of their persistence as relics, we know that bush Muli and Indian. This is a bush, M-U-H-L-Y, Muli. Bush Muli and Indian rice grass were members of this pristine grassland community. 10 years after settlement, Mormon cattle had become numerous and were grazing the range too closely to permit the Indian rice grass to mature seed. The original grassland was converted to typical, scrolling back to the top, converted to typical Mojave Desert dominated by creosote bush. The creosote bush, that's the, man, that's a, it's a really good fire source. It's not edible. I don't even know that the cow would eat any of that. Anyways, I was trying to remember where I was going with that. Anyways, it's an incredible fuel source. I think, and there's just thousands and thousands of miles of the creosote bush. chaparral, it's a chaparral bush is a creosote. So that stuff is a biofuel. And if you're just harvesting, you know, trimming them and collecting them, I would think that the desert could do what a lot of people envision hemp could do as fuel, biofuel. It would have a lot of tar, require, you know, the fracking, the same, you know, fracking off the vapors and then condensing it. If you know how the process of gasoline works, you get the same fuel, essentially, biofuel, like a gasoline or a diesel, and depending on all the steps that you go through, it, you know, determines the purity. Well, let's say diesel, for instance. It used to be a byproduct of gasoline. Then, you know, diesel, he got up the engine, and you can run French fry grease in the diesel, I guess, right? With some conversion. But anyways, it was a byproduct, and now we see all the industry where you know, diesel's higher than gasoline, and it never used to be up until the last few years. But anyways, that's just something that goes along with all these lies that are being told to us about the ecology of the desert. And you know, there's certain valid points, but definitely big lies. And we're going to get to Curon Suckling here pretty quick. Man, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. We got Clive and Bundy's coming on at 2 o'clock, so, and I definitely want to listen to that. I may have to pick up next week. Let me go ahead. Finish it. So the intense competition for forage by livestock owners was halted by the Taylor Grazing Act of 1934. The big reduction in grazing use in 1936, about 50%, didn't bring about any noticeable range improvement. And another cut in authorized use was made by shortening the length of the grazing season. It was after this second cut that Woodbury and Hardy, 1948, reported a desert tortoise population density of 150 tortoises per square mile. BLM made further cuts in grazing use in the early 50s and again in the 60s. In 1970, 1,500 acres of tortoise habitat were fenced and closed to all grazing by livestock, sheep. Use was eliminated. 4 years later, it comes from Combs, 1974, reported 39 tortoises per square mile. So that's a big difference. No wildlife, nothing to make poop. They're starving to death. And I think this will speak to that here in a little bit. Between Hardy's census in 1948 and Coombs' census in 1974, livestock grazing was reduced 100%. There was a 74% reduction in tortoise density. Now, if you extrapolate it further, I'm pretty sure that's going to be a 0% of the population or 100% reduction in tortoise density. Rabbits were abundant in the enclosure until 1982, and tortoises could meet their protein requirements by eating rabbit pellets. Now, rabbit pellets were scarce after 1983. The tortoises were doing so poorly that a veterinarian, that's Dr. James Jarchow, was consulted by this other Dr. Jarchow in 1987 and found that six tortoises from the enclosures that he examined were all suffering from osteoporosis. He attributed this condition to insignificant protein in their diet. Dr. Charjow wrote he wrote a prescription for these tortoises. One, he recommended a predator control program designed to eliminate those individual predators preying chiefly on this species. He recommended that the desert tortoise habitat should be managed to promote the resurgence of this Muhlenbergia porteri growth, and seeding campaigns should be instituted. Supplemental feed in the form of scattered timothy or Bermuda hay was should be provided at times of drought and midsummer. Number four, additionally, enclosures should be erected in critical areas. So this prescription is not backed by clinical experience. There is no evidence that any of these remedies prescribed are practical and beneficial. Years of management by untested theories have brought this once thriving population to the verge of extinction. Dr. Jaw Chow examined five tortoises from the Littlefield plot, which is open to cattle grazing. Littlefield is, I'm going to assume that's in the strip of Arizona, Littlefield, Arizona, along the Virgin River, below the gorge, between the bottom end of Utah into Arizona before Nevada. So Dr. Jarchow, it's like that name, Jarchow. He examined the five tortoises from Littlefield, and for three of these, he reported no abnormalities were evident. The abnormalities noted in the other two species were not related to their diet. He also took blood samples from each tortoise and sent them to a laboratory for a complete analysis. From this, these data, he concluded they were considered presently healthy and well nourished. Although it is coincidental and not planned, these two plots in the Beaver Dam Mountains demonstrate the relation of cattle grazing to desert tortoise welfare. Cattle have been excluded from the Utah plot for 19 years. The tortoises exhibit symptoms of protein starvation associated with high mortality. The Arizona plot is open to cattle. The tortoises are healthy and well nourished. If tortoise biologists are correct, then areas from which livestock have been excluded for a long time should have thriving tortoise populations. On the other hand, the science of rain ecology predicts that excluding cattle will reduce the tortoise population and they will become rare. Cattle excluded areas. The cattle have been excluded from the Nevada test site and the desert wildlife range for many years. The tortoises are rare and doing poorly in both areas. A small tortoise population was studied intensely for 10 years in Rock Valley on the Nevada test site, from which cattle had been excluded for 40 years. These tortoises were under continual stress. They suffered from a scarcity of water, insufficient nitrogen, that's from protein in their diet, and an excess of potassium. They could excrete the potassium in their urine as other animals do, but urinating would have left them dehydrated. So they maintain it, held it in, retained it, that is. Tortoises urinate only when they have water to drink. They could have converted the potassium to an insoluble form and excrete it in their scats. This requires nitrogen, which would have come from catabolizing their own tissue. That's Nagy and Medica in 1986. This stress could be relieved if the tortoises had access to their natural food source, cow dung. Fresh cow dung is 85 to 90% water. Bees and butterflies drink from fresh cow pies. Cow dung could also supply the high quality protein tortoises require. The excess potassium came from consuming plant material high in potassium, but low in other nutrients. Thousands of years of adaptation to a highly nutritious dung diet has left the desert tortoise ill-prepared to switch to a bulky diet of fresh plant material. Nagy and Medica, 1986, found that during the spring active period, desert tortoises would not or could not eat enough plant material to maintain their body weight. During the lush spring period, desert tortoises were on a reducing diet. I think I might make it. Summary and conclusions. The historic record shows that desert tortoises have coexisted with cattle for 300 years in California and Mexico and at least 100 years elsewhere. The highest desert tortoise densities known occurred at times when overgrazing by livestock was the severest ever known. The fewer the cattle on the range, the fewer the number of the tortoises. Excluding cattle for many years endangers the tortoise population. It is known all over the world and even well understood in developing countries of Africa that overuse of the range by one species of animals will degrade the range for that species and its numbers will decline. But this same time, overuse will improve the range for other species and its numbers will increase. Severe overgrazing of the public domain by livestock after World War I improved the habitat for tortoise and brought on a population explosion similar to the famous deer eruption on the Kaibab. BLM's conservative grazing management program is designed to restore degraded by years of overuse by livestock. Restoring the range is beneficial to some wildlife, bighorn for instance, but it is detrimental to tortoises. Like jackrabbits and mule deer, tortoises, they thrive on deteriorated rangelands. Declining numbers of desert tortoise since the Taylor Grazing Act of 1934 is a direct result of decreased livestock grazing and improved range conditions. That's almost oxymoronic to say. Then goes on with the all this that's cited here. Literature cited, and that'll be included. Got 3 minutes, and I might have to overrun just a little bit. Let's take you down there, Jordan. Excuse me, I need a drink. And where are we? I'm thinking that's where I'm going to have to end. I'll come back next week. And I think I will do that. We're gonna end with this video. Gotta love it. This so-called best science expert doesn't even know cattle have cloven hooves. Not to mention the supposed harm in this cattle battle, tale of the tortoise and the hare, hoof and hide, the truth saga. Try that again. A hoof and hide, the truth saga, and beyond to the actual shoot to kill and cover up. That's what happened. USA versus Bundy et al. Witness number 303. That's me, Vincent Easley. Did a shoot to kill and cover up policy set the stage for the Bundy Ranch standoff? Y'all remember I said earlier, it looks like the BLM is out there to kill. I'm pretty certain. So let's, did we get it in here? I got the, it's going to change me altogether, ain't it? I did it wrong. Get back here. How come I got put the wrong link in there? So that's perfect. We'll pick up with that one next time. And, I'd say that's just, fortuitous. I'm going to go kill my players, recorders, and I'm going to leave this play, and I'm going to actually go get, I'm going to let Clive and Bundy play through, so nobody's on right now, and we're going to do it. So I'm going to quit right now where I can, and give me 2 minutes to go get it. Stop recording here, and give me your audacity. We're going to